Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that
hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and today is Thursday, February the 6th, 2014, and we welcome you to the show. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart. If you would keep me informed as to how my phone is working if I cut out, I think I may have the problem solved. But in any event, we welcome everyone to the show. We are, once again, very highly honored that you choose to spend this time with us and that we get to, once again, go through the ancient principles come from the Aramaic language and the Aramaic culture that delineates from the perspective of physics, from the perspective of deep, deep, deep psychology, from the understanding of physiology, exactly how the world works. When you go back into the ancient Aramaic, you do not find a theological language. Men have made up theological stories and pretended knowledge to keep us away from the true principles of love that are laid out in the ancient scriptures. If you listen to the men who've done that, of course, sadly, women get drawn into it too, you'll hear a conversation about a creator that will be given lip service as love, but then the conversation goes into intimidation, fear, suffering, pain, trauma, and the demand for retribution. All absolutely, totally, completely, 100% attributes of men projected into these men's images of the Creator. What we're looking to do is to go back to the pure teaching that appears in the ancient Aramaic and how to understand the way that this world works. Because without understanding, we destroy ourselves. Without recognizing the principles by which we operate, we wonder why relationships are so traumatic. And we have created the trauma in our relationships. We wonder why finances don't go well, and we have created the lack of abundance in our world. We wonder why diseases strike and proclaim ourselves innocent victims when we have no clue what it is that organizes and sets up what happens in our physiology and our responsibility for that. And people say, you mean the little old lady who's so innocent and so sweet and has this horrible disease, it's all her fault? Well, I'm not going to go into a fault assignment because that's a psychological dynamic that is off base. But I am going to say, yes, it is absolutely her responsibility. What energies has she engaged in that do not belong in her structure? What energies were inherited in her structure that had she been given the true teachings, she would have known how to remove, that is, forgive, and been free of them and their effects, and which are called disease. Yes, we've been taught improperly how this energy system called life works. And so all kinds of drama and trauma shows up. We end up in confusion. And when the real principles show up, it raises great deals of stress. And the reason it raises so much stress is because when one lives in blockage of truth, which is what the world teaches, living in that blockage of truth means that when truth starts to show up, stress is going to skyrocket through the roof. And most people, when their stress skyrockets, have that stress attached to getting rid of the source of the information that resonates or shows them their blockages, the blockage of truth, and shows them where their stress is. Most people have that stress attached to getting rid of that information, and so they attack another. In so doing, in attacking, they give up the very essence of their own human lives. For a lack of knowledge, my people have been destroyed, the ancient scriptures say. This isn't theology, folks. It's just the way it works. One of the things I have in my mind today, I was recently visiting with some folks who had young people around the house, and these young people were watching MTV, and as I sat and watched the brain rot that was offered as entertainment, and I watched how these young minds just sat there and just sucked all that energy in, I found it appalling. For lack of knowledge, not knowing how this energy system works. You know, there's an interesting opening line in the book of John, which has been totally misconstrued and totally misinterpreted from the Aramaic. We're told by the Greeks that it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. But in Aramaic, what it gives us is a principle of creation and our part in creation. It tells us how this energy system works. So in Aramaic, when you go to that opening statement, rather than saying in the beginning was the Word, what it says is in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. Telling us is that the mind energy that we engage in is what is back of and superior to our whole creative process. And if we engage unconsciously in mind energy that is foreign to this system, we create disease, disorder, dissatisfaction, pain, drama, lack, and all the insanities that are running our world. Sitting watching the brain rot that spewed out of the television set on MTV, I mean, I won't even describe it on the radio show. I'd be concerned that the FCC would come and shut us down. It was so, not even sure what word to use. Disgusting would describe my reality about it. But if there were such a thing in a civil, human-oriented society as something disgusting, this was it. And it's just amazing to watch and recognizing the millions and millions of young people who are just sitting and have no idea what they're doing to themselves, what they're doing to their family systems, what they're doing to their children. No idea. They think it's entertainment. And yet this stranger that's been invited into their houses destroys their minds and their capacity to think, their morals, and everything that goes with it. So I just want to put out, and if you have children, if they're watching this stuff, give your children the understanding that whatever mind energy they engage in literally becomes the frequency that organizes break that word down, organize, it literally becomes the frequency that becomes their physiology, that becomes their emotions, that becomes their so-called thinking process. It's the raw material. Now, somebody would say, well, they're sitting in front of the television. They know that that isn't real. It doesn't matter whether it's real or not. It doesn't matter whether they know that it is real. It's building brain cells in them. It is mind energy. And that mind energy produces information from within that ultimately becomes the destroyer of mind, body, emotions, and physiology. For a lack of knowledge, it's bizarre. And of course, if you found yourself unwittingly engaging in those energies, then you know that if you've been around this work for long, the solution lies in the arena of forgiveness. Now, that doesn't mean forgiving MTV. That doesn't mean forgiving somebody for what they said or what they did. The word forgiveness, as we're using it, goes back to the first century Aramaic, and it has to do with changing the content of one's own mind, of removing what does not belong within. So forgiveness properly applied would be applied to the garbage mind energy that people have taken on and didn't know they were doing, to remove that energy. So if you replace the word forgive with remove every time you use it, you realize that you don't have the right to remove another. You don't have the right to remove yourself. That's murder and suicide. But if someone shows up and resonates something in you, content in you, that is painful, that does not support your living your life truly as a true human being, then you apply forgiveness to that energy to remove it from your structure. There is a technology that was known in the first century and buried by the Greeks 2,000 years ago. If you want to access the technology, we'd be delighted for you to go to our website. It's there free. If you go to www.whyagain.org, whyagain.org, and in the upper left-hand corner, there's a link there that says start here, or there's a bullseye in the middle of the page you can click on, and that will take you into a whole list of links that will give you radio shows where we've walked somebody through the whole forgiveness process, the explanation of the process, the worksheet itself. Many people excited when they hear about this and go, wow, this is really cool. I'm going to do this. And then they have to start to confront some of the content that they're carrying around, whether that content came to them through their own lives or what they have just sucked in unknowingly from the world, whether it came to them through their genetics. And it can be quite a trying challenge to start to work through those things. That's one of the reasons we do this radio show. And that is to be here every day, 5 days a week, to create support for anyone who really wants to do their work. You know, when Jeannie and I travel, we're on the road 6 to 10 months of the year. We do our work, travel workshops free, and we pay our own expenses, not because we're independently wealthy, but because we want to support every mind, heart, and being on the planet returning to true human life. The purpose of this show and the dedication of the people who bring it to you. You know, Dr. Tim, bless his heart, the amount of time that he spends supporting us with this show, especially with the way we're traveling, is awesome. And Michelle, we appreciate you as well, and the input from everybody else that jumps on the show, it's absolutely awesome. It's a challenge to try to carry this out on our own. Well, I can't say it's a challenge. We can't do it. The project is so much bigger than we are. But if it seems like a worthy effort, we invite you to support us with your effort. And your efforts might look like, gee, there's a project, Michael, that I'm willing to take on to support you guys so you don't have to do it. Gee, I've benefited greatly from your work, Michael. I'm going to get on your website, and I'm going to hit that donate button, and I'm going to supply you with some money to fund the next project that you're doing. Or it might look like, you know, I became acquainted with this worksheet. I'm starting to do it. I came by it freely. I'm going to pay it forward. I'm going to show somebody somewhere in my life that worksheet once a week, just one person a week, a new person I'm going to introduce to the worksheet every week for the next year and start to do that. I'm going to start a support group. I don't know anything about this work. How do I start a support group? Well, Jeannie has spent, and many others have spent, many, many hours on the website putting together a how-to of a support group. You don't have to know anything about this work to start a support group. Basically, what most support groups do is they show an hour of one of our videos and then enter into working with discussion and the worksheet process. And as you do that, you'll develop the skills. If you want to go to another level, certainly, there's teacher training every summer at Heartland. That's a place to get a new skill level at working with these tools. But we invite you, if this project, as big as it is, sounds worthy, then we invite you to look at how you can support it. What you can actually do, you know, the kings of old and all the way through, and I don't care whether it's King George or King Obama, they know how to keep people from doing true spiritual work. Engage them in the Colosseum. Send them off to the Colosseum. You know, we were recently in Rome, and they just, I guess it's just the last year or so that they've actually opened the lower level of the Colosseum. And they said that when they opened it, they found countless bodies, countless, just piled up from having been gladiators in the Colosseum. And that's how the people were kept at a frenzy pitch, distracted from their lives, living meaningless lives of the viciousness and violence of watching the blood sport. And the blood sport continues. You know, we just had a big example of it on Sunday. Same thing. Consumes billions of dollars and billions of man and woman hours. If we could get people to just put 1% of what goes into blood sport in this country. If we could just get young people to put 1% of their energy into what they put into things like MTV and their video games that just consume their lives when they could be doing something meaningful and contributing to their own lives and to the lives of the people around them, really, truly living as human beings, just 1%, the shift on the planet would be absolutely awesome. But the kings have been honing their skills of brainwashing and dumbing people down for a long, long time. We're here to wake people up. And we're glad you're here to share the time with us. And so, Jeannie, do we have Dr. Tim with us today?
We do, and
hello,
he is
Jeannie.
On.
Oh, good. Well, let's say hello to the young man. How do you be,
hello,
sir?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you for the kind words. It's an honor, it's a privilege to be on the team and have the time and talent to donate to further this cause, and it's paying huge dividends in my life. So it is not a sacrifice, it is a blessing.
I'll second that. I'm in exactly the same mindset. I can remember when the Colosseum and the meaningless pursuits were what I thought life was about. And every day I thank the Creator that I was given the privilege of finding the teachings of the Aramaic, first century Aramaic Yeshua, and the practical application of just here's how you create a life and here's what it's really about. It's certainly been an awesome privilege to have that handed to me.
Well, I have a little piece of something to share.
Cool.
I know how you talk in your lectures about the biblical quote that says, the eye is the lamp of the soul, and if the light for you is darkness, how deeply your darkness become, and how in the ancient Aramaic that refers to how the perceptual mind is meant to be your light for this earthly life, so you navigate around and don't bump into walls or walk off a cliff, or so you can actually perceive actuality clearly. And in the ancient Aramaic, light was love, And darkness was hostility or fear. And that's one of the things I've heard many, many times in your lectures as I listen to them over and over again.
Right.
And someone from a very progressive company, a young entrepreneur that I am familiar with from a very progressive company, sent me a video yesterday about this wonderful thing he was doing at his company that every year he puts on a love week. And he's been prompted to do that, not because he's some bleeding heart liberal, but because there's so much research about the benefits of this positive mindset. And there's a researcher from Harvard, his name was Sean Achor, A-C-H-O-R. And he's won distinguished teaching awards at Harvard, and he's delivered lectures on positive psychology and has done research on happiness and success. And one of the quotes that was used in this video is from Sean Achor, and this is his quote. "It turns out our brains are literally hardwired to perform at their best, not when they are negative or even neutral, but when they are positive," unquote. We have science in the 2000s finally catching up with what they knew 2,000 and 3,000 and 4,000 and 5,000 years ago. And whatever we can do with ourselves individually to learn the tools that will help me restore myself to that conscious awareness of my true nature of love and hold love present in my mind when I think of any object of attention, I'm going to get a better life going. I'm going to be more productive. Of course, these people are promoting it because then workers are going to be more productive and it's going to help their bottom line. And that's okay, depending upon their goal, but I thought it was just a wonderful thing to share that I know you'll be able to sleep better at night now knowing that science is validating what they've known for thousands of years, and we're just learning to discover in this lifetime.
Well, you know, it's interesting how long it takes for somebody to hang out with this work to build the brain cells for meaning within it, but certainly after 45 years plus, I think I've been saying 45 years for about 5 years now, so it's probably getting time for me to adjust the numbers to 50, but I started when I was 2, by the way. It's interesting to watch how long it takes, but just observing the changes in people's lives. I mean, and you've seen it too, from aches and pains to horrific physical traumas to psychological traumas to financial difficulties to relationship issues. I mean, just on and on and on. And the number of people whose lives have turned around or even whose lives have been saved, you know, people who are on the verge of death. It's just, you don't need much science to observe it and watch it happening. And, of course, then you add the science to it. It's just verification for the mind that requires that, but it's certainly awesome to watch it when people, and I enjoy being able to say to people, well, you know, don't believe a word I've got to say, just pick up the tool and try it, watch what happens. And people go back and go, oh my God, it works. Actually, there's a review, there are a number of reviews on Amazon on my book, and there's one review from somebody who you know, kind of poo-poos it and says, you know, this just doesn't make any sense, and then they fill in with, and then I use the worksheet, and I don't know how it happens, but by God, it works. So it's pretty cool to watch how that that occurs and the changes that happen in people's lives. It's
well, and the
very gratifying.
The other thing I would offer is that I've listened to Friday's show several times now with Dale, and I was listening. I listened again yesterday, and when I combine his definition of faith from the ancient Aramaic, which we talked about, oh, I think last week or the week before.
Right.
And then what he was talking about on Friday, and he talked about the word prophet, how it didn't have anything to do with somebody who could foretell the future, but it had something to do with the concept of becoming an open, flowing conduit for that creative life force, for the mind of Christ that wants to express through me. And when I combine that with the ancient definition of the word faith that Dale gives us, it just starts to make sense at a whole different level. That definition for faith that Dale gave us was not believing in something that's going to happen, but he gives the definition as consciously acting from the rooted center of being. So faith is about taking action from that core of my being where I'm connected to the source that's living me, breathing me, keeping my heart pumping. And if I combine that with the word prophet, for me, it speaks of what I've been witnessing more and more as I've made it a practice to consciously ask many, many times a day, Ruka, what would you have me do? What does this person need? What should I do in this moment? How should I respond to this situation? And I've been developing that practice over the past few years more and more, and then just watching how things work out in ways I never would have guessed, and often far better than I had ever planned, even though moment to moment there are times when things don't go at all the way I had planned. And my traditional response would have been anger or fear or sadness or frustration or hurt. And when I've developed this habit of just taking a breath and asking, Ruka, what do you want from me here? How can I serve you here? That I'm literally doing that, making myself open, and I'm literally then taking action more from the rooted center of my being rather than from the 9-bit mind and what it wants to play out in terms of what it's been conditioned to think and do.
Absolutely. Powerful. And for those who are perhaps new to the show, when Dr. Tim mentions the word Ruka, he's short for forming an Aramaic term, which is Ruka Dikudsha. And they're the words that from the Greek translations have been translated as the Holy Spirit, but there's nothing there about a disembodied spirit being. What it speaks of is a literal feminine elemental force in us that by definition undoes the effects of our errors. Here's a power that can reach throughout all of the world, through every mind, through every circumstance, through every situation where in error we have created something, and it can undo those errors. So that's the first part of the definition, undoes the effects of errors and teaches us the truth. And while the average, what we call the non-being mind, is hanging out trying to figure it out, oh, if I could just figure this out, one who's chosen the route of forgiveness and collapsing the mind that wants to figure it out now has access to a power that can literally reach throughout all the universe, throughout all time, throughout all of our generations and all of our genetics, change the effects of our errors, and then, rather than figuring it out, you realize that you're being taught, and that's the other half of the definition. She who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. And I know that for me, more and more and more, where I thought I was figuring things out, what I've realized is that the more I've engaged in forgiveness, the more I'm available for her to teach me. And I suspect, Dr. Tim, you've been finding that too as you do that, that something that we could never have figured out in our pea brains, all of a sudden she says, okay, here's how it works, and bang, it's just shown. It's absolutely dumbfounding and amazing when we think of it, you know, through or what we call thinking, through our so-called conscious minds.
I agree. There are times when I've practiced and rehearsed and drawn notes for a talk and had it all figured out what I was going to say and be in the middle of the talk and find myself saying something that was not in the notes and not rehearsed, and yet it was just perfect. And it had never come to me at any other time. It wasn't something that I had worked out over the past few weeks. And I've come to realize that's one of those times I'm just being taught.
Well, I wonder, Tim, if you've had the opposite experience, and that is I've gone back on occasion and listened to a tape, a video or whatever of something I taught 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago, and I've been absolutely dumbfounded when it came out of my mouth. It's like, oh, my God, I didn't know I knew that. Did I know that? I had no conscious awareness of that, but I was being taught, and I've gone back so many times and went, holy cow, I understood that back then.
Yeah, or at least I talked as though I did.
Right, exactly. That's what I thought, you know. Did I understand it? No, but she was teaching me, and, you know, come to new levels of understanding it. Exactly, exactly, yeah. Pretty exciting process when you engage it. Well, do you have anything else to share with us, Dr. Tim, before we check the phones?
No, I think that'll cover me for today.
Awesome. Well, you are appreciated, and Jeannie, do we have anybody in the chat room who has a question for us or anybody with a hand up in the phone queue? Our call-in number, by the way, is 646-200-4169. If you're one of those radio stations that carries the show and we don't have access to you through our control panel, you can call into the show, and if you push 1, that will raise a little hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will click your button, and you'll be on. So, Jeannie?
There's nobody has their hand up, and there's several people in the chat room, several people on the switchboard. And Michelle was just sharing that 5 minutes till showtime, she was holding the space of love, and as different people came to her mind and everything, that she said it took the full 5 minutes. She didn't run out of people or time, and just let whoever pop in, and held the space, and that it was just awesome. And said she felt, you know, just tears of joy and all coming, and just stayed with the continuous breath and letting the emotions come, and that it was just awesome holding that space just before showtime.
Well, it's been a while since we've mentioned that, so let's just put that out there as the invitation, you know, based on some insights that Mitzi had. We started several weeks ago to ask people to set their phone alarms for 5 minutes to showtime. And then when their alarms go off, take that 5 minutes before showtime, focus and center in bringing forward the active presence of love. And so synchronizing everybody across the world that listens to the show in that space of love in order to assist in creating that critical mass. And I haven't heard back from Mitzi, but she had a project that she's working on to put on YouTube, inviting people into that space. So it'll be cool when she gets that together, and we'll give you details when we've got access to it. So if you're on the show, if you're on the phone lines, if you push 1, you're next in line. We'd love to hear your question. If you're engaging in the worksheet process, I know all kinds of questions come up, and sometimes it's like for many people, at least the feedback I've gotten as well, you know, that's such a basic thing. I don't want to waste the show's time with that question. I just won't ask. But oftentimes those seemingly basic questions are some of the most important ones to reinforce, especially with the fact that there are lots of new folks on the show all the time and lots of old-timers who need a reminder. So if you've got a question, and I know that if you'd heard me do the introduction and then heard the conversation Tim was just having about his sewing together some of the ideas from Aramaic Fridays, I know that if we were live and Dr. Tim and I just walked down off the stage, finished doing a presentation on those topics, that we would be mobbed with people who have questions. So we're
Michael,
here to answer your questions. Yes, sweetie.
Michelle in the chat room says that she thinks Mitzi is shooting for April the 22nd, which is Earth Day. And
awesome.
But then we also have a call on it. So 517, so maybe it's Rex or Mitzi. 517, you're
cool.
On the air.
Hi there. It is Rex, but minus
Hi.
Mitzi. She's actually running appointments today. She's got some clients she's working with. And hello, everyone.
Awesome. Hey there, young man. How do you be?
I'm being really well. I've been a bit busy. I had clients yesterday and had this morning, and I was just doing some printing out of the Series 4, the Lesson 4, Series 1 through whatever it is. in the next section of the Laws of Living and listening to the program. And because there was no callers, I thought I would just kind of hold my hand up and share a little bit about what we had happened in the prison, if Michelle hadn't shared. So I don't know if we talked yesterday about it because I wasn't available to be here in the program. So I thought
we're waiting with bated breath to find out how it went.
Well, it actually went really cool. It was awesome. We had our group in the fourth level is a little small, but we're hanging in there. There was 11. And although the chaplain kind of mentioned it, he didn't go any further with it, which is interesting. And then the second group, I think we had about 20, between 20 and 24. Michelle counted, and then we weren't sure, and I kind of counted. And it's interesting how we do this thing with the count thing. It seems like there's more than is there quite often. But we had worked with the purpose exercise, the personal purpose, the primary purpose being to develop a conscious, viable spiritual body, and had shared that the week before, and then also the secondary purpose. And you know, I anticipate based on some of the input I get from the inmates that they, some of them are doing the work, and but they're coming every time, and that's cool, you know. And then some of them are maybe not doing the work, but I was pleasantly surprised with the second group that we kind of ran out of time. We didn't hardly spend any time on the actual next lesson because the majority of the time was they all wanted to share their personal experience of their purpose and what they were coming up with by doing the exercise. And so they kept raising their hand, raising their hand, raising their hand. It was like out of maybe, let's say if there's 23, I think there was probably 12, maybe 13, maybe even 14 people that wanted to share verbally with the whole group. And it was just awesome to hear and that they're really working on. And some of their statements were so beautiful about, you know, creating the perfect world of love, and we did go through some clarification with that exercise so that they were working with their talents, their unique characteristics and abilities, along with what they love to co-create a perfect world, as Ruka would see it. And so we took some, you know, reminder, but it was just so exciting, and it still is, to see that they're actually doing the work. Here's a, and just as a reference, it's working with the inmates at the Michigan Reformatory. There was a prison break that happened in the sister prison next door a ways away, but it's, you know, a couple miles right there in Ionia. And they did catch the gentleman, and it was interesting. When he was free, we were doing our session, and when we did the five-minute love session, because the prisoners in the second session really enjoyed that, the 5 minutes of just extending love, like we were just talking about, Michael. And right, they actually reminded me, although I remembered at about 7 minutes to, one of the inmates was, he looked at me and he caught my attention. He was towards the back and he pointed to the clock without trying to disrupt the class, but he wanted to make sure I remembered that he wanted to do the love exchange, you know. And so those little things like that are really big things, actually, because we're in an environment, just to give a perspective of a lot of hostility and a lot of fear and a lot of violence still, even though it's in a prison. And while we were doing the love exchange, at the end of it, I said, and if you choose, just for a moment, if you don't mind, I'd like to say a petition to God for, you know, to give love and support, extend loving energy to the inmate that, you know, escaped and that his experience is guided by love and that he is, you know, safe and that the people that he is in contact and interacts with is safe and that whatever the highest good happen for him and anybody he's exposed to while he's out there in freedom. And I came home after that and Mitzi had told me that they had caught the prisoner. And I said, did you know what time it was? You know, just doing a little. But I thought it was interesting because I never was inclined to petition God to have him be caught. And I was guided to, you know, to say that petition in such a way that was allowed Ruka to do whatever was the best. And I was guided to do that. I didn't really pre-think it. It just happened in the moment. It was one of those occasions that Michael, you and Dr. Tim were talking about shortly, you know, briefly about, you know, being in the moment and just sharing what comes to your mind and heart. And so that was one interesting thing that happened for me personally, and then I think it was powerful as a group because they were all I watched them and they're just so much participating in the work. And Michelle and I both noticed is that gradually the whole group, they used to just want to sit out in the whole chapel. It's a pretty big chapel, a seat, I don't know, 400 or 500 people. And in the center part of the chapel, I've asked everyone to kind of at least sit in the front. And there's, oh, I don't know, 30 rows or something like that. And they spread all out in there, you know. Well, gradually they've been moving up to the front. And so they get there, as soon as they get there, they get their seats real quick in the first two rows. And we both noticed that we thought that was interesting because they seem to be enthralled with being as close to the information as possible. And I think it's a metaphor for them wanting to learn it. But the idea of them really doing the exercises and practicing the work is exciting. So that was the main thing that I wanted to share. And the depth of comprehension is the word for me. The depth of comprehension I am experiencing personally as a student has been awesome with sharing it. And I know there's many of us out there that have said as teachers that, you know, you teach what you need to learn most, and we give all that information out, and many of us really believe that. But my experience was that it's really, really true. And as I'm sharing it, I'm having awareness just one after another, and it's very exciting on many levels in many ways. So that's my update.
Rick.
Open any input. Yes.
Michelle's in the chat room, and so she says she can't talk, but she would like for you to share about the guy that was going to read his secondary purpose, and somebody made a like a majestic horn noise.
Oh, it's really cool to watch. It's good. Thank you, Michelle. There's a gentleman that has a tendency to want to be the center of attention. Now, those of you that know me may have noticed that that is something that I have definitely worked with in the past, and it's a lot different for me now, but that is definitely something that I always wanted. I wanted to be up front. I wanted to be the one, blah, 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 blah. So I'm observing this being a nice mirror for me and seeing that he's got that kind of, appears to have that pattern as well. And the other inmates, this guy has actually been confronted a couple times very lovingly because quite often he'll just start asking questions just so he can hear himself talk, which, you know, we give a lot of latitude to that because it's awesome having these guys ask questions and interact. Anyway, so he was talking, and he got to his turn kind of, like he had his hand up, and he didn't call him right away, but he got to his turn, and he said, "I'd like to share my, you know, experience of what I got out of what I'm doing here." And then in the back, one of the inmates went, "Doo, doo, doo, doo." And it was just loud enough that it was such a thing in the moment. It was just, it wasn't real loud, but it was just loud enough so everybody could barely hear it. And it was just total silence for about 3 or 4 seconds. And then including the man that was sharing, that was being teased lovingly, actually laughed, and the whole group, we all just bust out laughing, and it was hilarious. And then he, of course, went on to share his experience, which was really profound, actually, and beautiful. So that, I think, was what Michelle was referring to, and and she said it last time, it appears that we're having more fun with the inmates, and they're having more fun with us, and they're interacting and being playful. And there's the jostling back and forth sometimes, you know, and I'm very lovingly, you know, I had another inmate that was having a difficult time while he was sharing, and he was kind of appearing to be stuck in something. So I said, and I watch other inmates that actually have a pretty good grasp of the principles, and they're seeing what he's doing, And some of them act a little impatient. Others just know that whatever the person's working through, they'll get through. And so then I said, well, maybe you have this. And then he interrupts me. And I let him, and I just listen, and he interrupts and says some more. And then I said, well, what I'd invite you to do is to consider, and then he interrupts me again. And I
I've never seen anybody else do that, Rex.
I've never done that. Don't interrupt me,
no.
Michael. No.
Oh, well, I've never seen it happen.
Anyhow, so that was kind of fun to see, too. But the idea was that it just watching them share. And then the same man is one of the people who has been stepping forward and saying, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I'm feeling. And, you know, he's outspoken, but he's also one of the proponents of the work and really doing it. So that's just some of the things, and there's so many different things that have happened. I mentioned to the chaplain in our interaction, he came in at one point, and I have committed to being done at the time that we need to be done. So we start the music with 5 minutes to go, so they still have the last, we listen to the song with Michael Beckwith. In Paradise, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the song right now, but it's a beautiful song. We listen to it every day at the end of the session. So we do 5 minutes. Well, the song was still playing, and the inmates were milling towards the door because the guard said, now it's time to go. So that's cool. We keep playing the song. Well, the chaplain came in, and I looked at him when he first came in, and he went, all right, let's go. You know, it was just like what that one experience we had where he came in and was yelling. You know, well, this one, he had his voice up there a little bit, but it wasn't yelling yet. And he saw that I was just sitting on the podium, and Michelle was interacting with an inmate, and I looked at Michelle and said, Michelle, time for the inmates to go. And she go, oh, got it. So she came up. She was trying to work something out. But it was cool to see because it was almost as if the chaplain had an expectancy to do this thing again, but there wasn't any cause for it, so it never happened. So that was another cool thing. We've shared a couple things from the chaplain that was really seemed different, out of context for what we've grown accustomed to, what he might say or act like. But it's good stuff. We appreciate all the love and support and the energy that's happening. And I'm also starting on Wednesday our laws of living, the first time we've taught this to the public. And we have some people signed up, so we're doing the laws of living here in Lansing, and anybody who's inclined to want to participate, it's going to be Wednesdays for 11 weeks, and it's very reasonably priced. It's actually even less than what we charged, or we being Michael and the other gentleman, Dr. What's his name again? Dr. Dan McDougall, yes. But when they taught it back in the 70s, they charged even more than we're charging now. So it's a reasonable fee. We're intent on getting this material out, and we'd love all the support and share it with as many people as possible, and so we can get more people to the workshop.
Cool, and people can connect with you through your website, stillpointbreathoflife.com.
Yes.
And one of the things I'd like to do is just add, for people who haven't been involved in this conversation about the prison program before, just a little bit of context when you talk about, you know, these guys breaking out in hilarity. And, you know, go back to the first time, Rex, that we all went in there to work with them. And this is a disciplinary prison where they bring the quote-unquote worst prisoners from all over the state of Michigan to this one very high-security facility, a facility where when we first went in, there was an average of a stabbing once every other week, guards being attacked. It's just crazy time. And these guys are in there anywhere from 25 years to life. And the first day we went in, Mitzi and Rex and Jeannie and I are in the room, and these guys file in, two different groups. There wasn't one of them that made eye contact with anybody, including the other inmates. They just filed in like a, what word would I use? A group of beaten puppies is what they looked like. They sat down. It was very little conversation. You know, inmates not looking at each other, no acknowledgement, no greeting of us, no nothing. And to recognize the depth of despair
in the lives of these men who were in there for 25 years plus, and the way that they're treated and how demeaned they've been, to give them the gift, Rex, that you guys are giving of this insight, of this recognizing and reinforcing for them who they are and what they're really capable of, even though they're locked behind bars, to the point where they, with eagerness, come to a class that teaches them about their spirituality and about how to live their lives. It's just awesome. And one of the things that I hold the space for is that because these guys are in there for so long, many times their families move from wherever they live in Michigan to Ionia and live there for years because their parent, their spouse is in prison, that we get to the point where we can extend that into the community so that the family has the support of laws of living as well, and really, you know, opening up. I would love to see a prison program for the officials and the guards in the prison doing this and having this knowledge and really transforming that whole environment to be a light within the prison systems throughout America, throughout the world. It'd be pretty awesome. So thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate the acknowledgement. And Michelle, obviously, is an active part of that team, and the team that, you know, we introduced into the system with Tony and Tony Hendrick and Dan Maynard were very, very supportive for the first series as well. So I give acknowledgement there because they were very, very helpful and still have been very supportive, although they're not really participating going in, but still in their mind and hearts and ask how things are going and are genuinely interested in the prisoners, which is cool to see. There's relationships being established that will be long-lasting, and it's exciting to see them do the level of work they're doing. And like you just put it in context, Michael, and to add a little bit to that, watching these men who are in an environment where they're told when they can leave their cell, if they can leave their cell, when they eat, they have a certain number of minutes to eat their meals. They have a certain number of minutes to be in the yard, if at all. And if they do anything that is a rule breaker, then in most cases, they'll be put in solitary confinement, and they call it the hole, literally. And if you saw this prison, it was built in the 1800s, I think middle or late 1800s. And it's a very old system, and they didn't build new cells.
I think it was actually a Civil War building, wasn't it?
It may very well have been.
I think it was built during the Civil War.
So, and then keep it in perspective, here's a group of guys that are in this environment, and we have choice over what we eat. They have no choice over what they eat. They either eat what's served in the moment on the plate, or they go hungry. And if they don't eat it fast enough to finish their food, then they don't get to eat either. And so it's a very structured system that is based in, appears to be based in fear. The guards and the way the system is set up is based on making sure they don't break out, making sure that they don't commit violence, making sure they don't. And then we walk in and say, hey, remember, you're created in the image and likeness of love. You are pure love. That's it. And I've said that every single day, and Michelle has said it, and we continue to repeat it over and over again. And I make a point to saying that. I think I'm gonna be pretty safe saying a minimum of 5 times every session, as many as 20 to 30 times every session. And I just plug it in. Anytime I can say it again, I repeat it again. And my intention in consciously is to get it into their brain cells so deeply that if I'm not there in the future or we're not there, it'll still be resonating in their mind. And they will go about changing someone else's life by offering them tools and then them taking the initiative to change their own lives. So
sure,
it's exciting work. I feel blessed to be on the team and blessed to have the opportunity, and it stretches me every time I go into the system. It stretches me, and it stretches me for a period of time after I leave. So I get to heal, and I get to see all my wonderful manifestations in my life, and some not so wonderful, and I do my best to embrace them all with love as quickly as I can.
Awesome. Well, one of the things that I hold also in the space is that there'll come a point where the prison officialdom, the administration, will see the wisdom in allowing food to be grown within the prison grounds by the prisoners as a therapeutic modality, and then that food being grown organically and being served in the prison system, one, cutting the expenses of the prison operation, and two, feeding some things with real nutrition rather than, you know, you open a number 10 can, you throw it in a pot and you heat it, and it's called dinner, actually serving real food. And, you know, so I see the space opening up for that change and shift, and where it will, not only will it not cost the prison anything, but it will benefit the prison by doing it. So I just see a new community effort happening in that regard, perhaps, that we attract a master gardener that would love to share that and is welcomed into the prison to help to do that.
Well, you know, it's interesting you've mentioned that, because in this system, because it's so focused on lockdown and so focused on control, they don't do that in this system. But I am aware that in another system, at least the one that I'm aware of, in the mid-Michigan, Carson City area, which is about 60 miles north of Lansing, Michigan, has a prison where they actually do have gardens, and the men are able to spend a certain amount of time in their garden and grow food. So it is happening, but this prison, again, like you mentioned, Michael, it's designed as a disciplinary prison, and you really have very little freedom once you come here. And people really like to leave this place.
Well, maybe we'll get to redefine discipline for them as it is truly defined, and that is properly taught rather than properly beat up. So
absolutely.
We'll keep holding that space.
It's awesome, and we're all doing some great work, and everybody out there that thinks, well, gosh, you know, Michelle and Rex are doing good stuff. Michael and Jeannie are doing really great stuff out there in the world, and Dr. Tim is doing great stuff out there, and, you know, and I'm just kind of living my life, and I'm doing my work. Well, if you're doing your inner work, you're equally making changes for all of us and supporting the people who seem to be up front doing the work outwardly. Everyone behind the scenes that is doing their own inner work is adding energy and love and consciousness to those of us that appear to be the ones up front doing that. And I say those words because what I'm realizing is it is truly a team, and how we are able to do what we do is because there's a group of us that have come together of like mind that are sharing these principles. And the beauty of it is Michael's work and his Ruka's work that Michael has and Jeannie are sharing all over the planet is being nurtured and, you know, encouraged and supported just by one person doing a worksheet. And I really think that's important, how that, like you mentioned so many times, Michael, leavens the whole loaf. And
for
then
sure.
Those people that happen to be up front, and it really is, we're just up front. It's not because we know more or we are more aware for anything like that. It's more that we just happen to be a personality that enjoys doing that, you know, and it's more of the focus. But everybody plays a really vital role in participating in that by just doing their own daily inner process and then just extending love to another person and another human being.
And we invite you to take it to the next level. Introduce somebody to a worksheet once a week. Do a worksheet with somebody. Start a support group. Take it to the next level. And I think Jeannie's trying to signal us that we're down to just a few seconds.
And so we're going to need to close out the show. We do invite you to bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Take a look on the website, March 7th to 15th. We've got a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again codependence intensive in Costa Rica. Come and play with us. Look at the website for this summer, and we appreciate each of you. Give the world the best gift you can possibly give them. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.